Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, March 17th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's St. Patrick's Day, and many people in this country celebrate the holiday by enjoying some spirits. So we've invited two beer experts to join us today on Food Friday, George DePiro of Druthers Brewery and Kevin Mullen of Rare Form Brewing Company are in the studio with us. So if you have a question about beer or brewing or anything related to that, give us a call at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, beer, and your calls coming up on Vox Pop Food Friday after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's a Food Friday, and boy, it's been a heck of a week. Started with a blizzard. It's ending with a holiday. To help us celebrate St. Patrick's Day, we have two brewmasters in the studio. First up is Chief Brewing Officer George DePiro of Druthers Brewing. George has won 3 gold medals at the Great American Beer Festival and had a taste of gold, silver, and bronze at the World Beer Cup. He is a self-described biochemist turned beer geek who refers to his OCD as simply attention to detail. Also joining us is Kevin Mullen. He's the owner and head brewer of the Rare Form Brewing Company in Troy, New York. Rare Form is a 5-barrel brewer featuring a wide range of crafted beers. So if you have a beer question, these guys probably know the answer. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpopwamc.org. voxpopwamc.org, but that number, 800-348-2551. George and Kevin, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Nice to have you guys here, and a lot of bottles here. So let's start with, before we get into the pleasantries, let's start with what we have today. And Kevin, tell us what you brought.
Yeah, we brought our Night Ride Dry Stout. It's a 4%. Nice little stout for the holidays. For today. And then also our Coconut Crass Porter, which is a little different rendition of our standard Crass Porter. This one we use age it with toasted coconut.
You age it with toasted coconut. Yep. So you just dump the coconut in, or how do you do that?
Yeah, we actually toast it at our bakery down in Troy, and then take it and put it in the fermentation and let it sit in there for a period of time until we're ready to the flavors where we want it to be.
And then you strain it out? How do you get it out?
We actually have them in bags.
Oh, really?
Yep.
So it's like a tea,
yeah,
sort
absolutely.
Of a, like a breathable bag? Well, that's amazing. All right, George DePiro, you have 37 bottles here, so you...
it's only 4.
All right, so what do you got?
I've got a Druthers Dry Stout because it is St. Patrick's Day, so figured that's appropriate. And then to compare and contrast stouts, I brought an oatmeal stout, which comes from the bigger island next door to Ireland. And then I've got, completely having nothing to do with St. Patrick's Day or Ireland or England, I've got Double Dare, which is a strong version of our award-winning Goza, which is a German-style sour ale with salt and coriander. Mm-hmm. And then a new beer called Mild-Mannered Pale, which was a bit of an accident that came out really good. We were trying to make a low-alcohol beer that still tastes malty, which is hard to do because malt is where the alcohol comes from. You use a lot of malt. That gives the yeast a lot of food. You get a lot of alcohol. So if you cut back on the malt, you get low alcohol, but you also cut malt flavor.
Interesting.
So we used a lot of special malts to get good malt flavor, but we kept the bitterness low from hops, but put a lot of hops into the young beer. That's called dry hopping, so mm-hmm. It's got a really big hop aroma.
Hops are so in the last several years.
Yeah.
And a lot of the IPAs that you see are very high alcohol, but yet you're not tasting a lot of malt. So where's the alcohol coming from?
Well, it's... they've used a lot of malt to get there. You could use a little sugar if, you know, some brewers might use that as an adjunct to keep the body light. But when you use, you know, outrageous amounts of hops, you'll cover up everything else. It's so you can bury all the other flavors with the hops.
And you guys both brought stouts. And Kevin, yours is, you said 4%?
4%.
George?
My dry stout is about 4-4.5% also, and the oatmeal stout is a more normal strength stout.
Which is 6?
5.4 or so.
But a lot of stouts you will see are not as high alcohol, and it's sort of counterintuitive to those going to buy a stout. You figure, okay, it's dark, it's heavy, it's a lot of alcohol, but it's oftentimes not as strong.
Well, dry Irish stouts are supposed to be weaker beers, and the beer gets its color from malt, and it gets its alcohol ultimately from malt, but it's the color of the malt that gives the beer its color, and it's the amount of malt that gives you the strength. So you can make a very dark beer that's very weak, or you can make a very light beer that's very pale.
Mm. I've had, I think some Imperial Stouts have been pretty high.
Yeah, those are meant to be big.
Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Before we taste the beer, let's take a call or two. I was hoping Joe Donahue would show up, because usually you say beer and then there's Joe, but apparently he's not here today. John in Boston Spa. John, you're on.
Yes, thank you. Actually, part of my question has just been addressed, but I like an IPA. I like a double IPA, typically, nice and bitter. And what I'd like to be able to do is drink more than one and a half or two of them. The session IPA seemed to not quite make it for me. So how can we get a better tasting session that's nice and bitter and more like a double IPA?
Okay, John, before they answer that question, you brought something up that I was in the beverage center the other day. What defines a session IPA?
It's an oxymoronic term.
What do you mean?
It's contradictory. IPA is a strong beer.
Right.
It's traditionally a strong beer. It was invented in England 150, 200 years ago. It was meant to be strong.
Yeah.
So if you say, you know, session beer is a weak beer.
Oh, is
you
that
drink
what
a
it
lot
means?
Of. Oh. Right. Because you can have a session with it. And so it's an oxymoronic term. Yeah.
And people's definition of session, it varies from brewery to brewery. You'll see a lot of people will consider if it's under 5%, then you're looking at a session. And so you'll see some of these session IPAs are like 5.5 or so. And even though so it kind of depends on the brewery, I guess, or the brewer that kind of say.
Maybe it depends on their liver.
All right. Well, let's get to John's question now. You've answered mine.
Right.
Do we remember what the question was?
Yeah, as we were just saying, it's the amount of malt is what determines a beer's malt flavor. And the more malt you use, the more malt flavor you get, but the more alcohol you get. So if you want malt character to your beer, you got to have a lot of malt, especially if you're going to just like go overboard with the hops. The hop flavor will bury everything mm-hmm. else. So to get a low alcohol beer that's high in hops and high in malt, it's just not possible.
A lot of breweries that you'll see now are also using a specific a higher class base grain, like some Maris Otter, some Optic, or some of that produces a little bit more of a malt flavor than just your standard two row that you're trying to really use just to really get the alcohol behind there. So there's possible ways of getting it. I think everybody kind of takes a different look at it, but it is a pretty difficult style to have. A lot of them come out a little too thin in the mouthfeel as well.
Why the popularity? I know I've asked George this before, but why now the popularity of IPAs and such hoppy beers?
I liken it to the hot sauce craze of 20 years ago, where people were fighting all out with Scoville units and who can make the hottest hot sauce? Who could kill my mouth the most?
Right.
It seems like we've kind of taken a step in or several steps in that direction with some of the IPAs out there.
I mean, hops are great, and there are different varieties, and
right.
there are some just taste completely different than others, and you gotta like malt too.
Yeah, I like a little bit of balance to my beers usually.
Yeah, a balance is nice, and I think also you're seeing a lot more IPAs now are not becoming so bitter as they used to be either. You're seeing more like late edition hops and a little softer on the bitterness and more in the aroma and flavor in the afterwards, after hopping kind of.
Our number here on Vox Pop Food Friday is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by George DePiro and Kevin Mullen as we talk brewing and beer. Let's go to Pete in Gilderland. Pete, you're on.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
You covered a lot of it already before my question was thought of, but I guess I want to relate, besides alcohol content, calories. Kind of always heard Guinness was low in calories, which surprised me with the thickness of it and whatever. So is there any way to relate different darknesses of beer and different qualities of beer with besides alcohol and also calories?
Well, one of the things, too, with Guinness is it's not a very strong beer. I mean, that's kind of an Irish dry stout is based pretty much on Guinness because everybody's familiar with it. But it's a little over 3%, I think 3.8.
No, volume, it's over 4.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's weak, though.
Yeah.
A beer's color, as we were just saying, doesn't have anything to do with its strength. Alcohol content and calorie content are directly proportional. The more alcohol, the more calories. That's how it goes.
Oh, okay.
There you go. Well, thanks a lot, Pete. We appreciate that call. 800-348-2551. All right, George.
I poured.
This smells delicious.
This was going to be the last thing I poured, but I figured since we were talking about this style,
fitting.
I did it. So this is my attempt at making a beer that is lower in alcohol, malty, and hoppy.
You can smell the hops.
You can smell the hops big time, that's but you also taste. Get the caramel malt character quite a lot under the hops. And then when you taste it...
Oh, that's very good. That's really good.
You get the caramel malt, you get the hop flavor, but it's not very bitter. But you do get the light body, the super light body that the gentleman on the phone was saying he doesn't want. It's like, I'm sorry, there's just no way around that because you have to skimp on the malt, and that's where the body comes from. But this does have as much malt flavor as any hoppy session beer, I mean, more than I've ever had.
For a fairly light beer, it's creamy,
though.
Yeah,
this is well under 5% alcohol, so you could have two of these and still make it to work the next day.
Yeah, you really get the hops on the nose, and then that malt characteristic takes over once you get it in your mouth.
Outstanding. All right, we've scored a hit already. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts. A food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery. rivervalley.coop. Roundhouse Bakery, Cambridge, New York. Featuring baked goods, along with coffee, teas, soups, and sandwiches, using locally sourced and organic as available produce and ingredients. Facebook.com/Roundhouse Bakery Cafe. Gloriosa & Company, Ashfield, Massachusetts. Preparing weddings, showers, reunions, and more at the Curtis House with 3 B&B rooms available or at their recently renovated barn. Farm to Vase Florals. Information at gloriosaco.com. Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, now in winter season, featuring farm fresh produce and handmade goods every Saturday, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. inside the Troy Atrium. TroyMarket.org. And Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings, Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com.
Yeah, some good old-fashioned American blues here on a St. Patrick's Day. That's what I like. Zach the engineer, who's dressed like you're just heading to Ellis Island, Zach the engineer. You really got the whole get-up on. And, well, it's Zach Malloy, after all. So, you know, I'm an American. I'm going to play some American blues music here on the show. Getting a thumbs up or perhaps some digit from the control room. Our number here is 800-348-2551. We talk beer today on this St. Patrick's Day. And joining us, Kevin Mullen, owner and head brewer of the Rare Form Brewing Company in Troy, New York. And George DePiro of Druthers Brewing. And, well, that was... First of all, George, that was a winner. What was the name of that one?
That's Mild-Mannered Pale Ale.
I like it. And that was made by mistake.
It was. One of my brewers, John, misread my instructions and used the wrong kind of caramel malt.
And fired him, but it still came out good?
Right. No, it was... It took a while to figure out that he made the mistake, actually, and I was just really pleased with how the beer was coming out as it was fermenting, but I was surprised. I was like, it's really quite a bit darker than I was expecting. How did this happen? And then as I was entering ingredients into the computer, I realized why we didn't have the caramel malt for a stout that we had brewed 2 days later. It's like, oh, our supplier didn't mess up. You put the wrong caramel malt into the...
So it basically, it took an audit to figure out what happened.
Yeah, basically.
Now, when you make a recipe, you come up with something like this. You want to do it again, and presumably again and again. How precise are your measurements? In other words...
Oh, they're precise.
Yeah, they're down to the ounce or the gram? Or
no,
what
at our level, we're doing 60 to 120 kegs at a time. So we don't have to be down to even a pound. But
yeah.
We are down to a pound.
But you have a consistent... In other words, this is not the first time you've made this.
This is the first time
really?
We've made this. Yeah.
Well, let's see. Bring the second one next time, and we'll see how you did. Now, Kevin, you're a much smaller brewer.
Correct.
Now, you're five barrel. What does that
five
mean?
Barrels. So every time that we're producing beer, we're making 10 kegs.
And this is by state law?
No. just as by the just the space that we have and
so
the brewery.
If you fall into a few mil, you may expand the place.
Absolutely.
Okay. So
somewhere lying around, let me know.
All right. Yeah, well, yeah. I'm in radio, so you may get some lint out of my pocket. All right. What do we have here?
So this is we call Night Ride. This is our dry stout. I thought it was fitting for today.
Okay.
This is 4% alcohol.
It's almost a coffee kind of nose to it.
Yeah, it's not overly roasty. It's not overly kind of, I want it to be really kind of just touch on those things, be a little bit more balanced and complex.
Interesting. You know, and I'm not a big stout drinker, but I'm always amazed. It tastes oftentimes in various brands lighter than I expect it to taste. And this has a light sort of a body to it.
There's a lot of different styles of stouts. And some of the stouts you'll get, like those imperial stouts, are obviously imperial. So you're going to be a lot stronger, heavier, thicker, a lot more like mouthfeel to them, as we would say. Where like a standard stout is usually, especially a dry stout, you're looking at something that's going to be a little bit, it's going to leave your palate really quick.
Yeah.
You're going to get this
flavor. Right.
And then it just kind of vanishes away.
It's good with food, I would think.
Absolutely.
Very nice. Very nice indeed. Our number here is 800-348-2551 on the St. Patrick's Day. We go to John in Rexford. John, you're on.
Yes, hello. John's in beer. It's a big day for us, I guess. So anyway, hey, a question for you. I've always been a fan of the Sierra Nevada, the Bigfoot barley wine. And I've had that every year. Just curious, I'll hang up and listen, but what goes into making that beer versus like a regular pale ale or an IPA? Like, what are some of the differences?
Okay.
More malt and more hops and Bigfoot specifically. But barley wine is just like any other beer. It's just stronger. That's all.
And what is it? How much alcohol does it have to be considered a barley wine? Or?
There's no laws.
Yeah.
But what do you think, Kevin? What's about the 8% at least?
I would say like 8. Yeah. I wouldn't get any lower than 8 and call it a barley wine.
Yeah, if you make a beer at 6.5 and call it a barley wine, people are going to like laugh at you. So.
Some 30 years ago, there used to be an imported beer store on Wolf Road. And I used to, once in a while, would get this expensive aged beer. I think it was Thomas Hardy. And was that a barley wine?
Technically, it's an English old ale,
yeah.
But old ale and barley wine there's a lot of overlap between many styles, and old ale and barley wine overlap.
It was
a
bit of an acquired taste.
It's very sweet.
Yeah.
I used to like Thomas Hardy's a lot. Very sweet, very oxidized, so lots of sherry notes to the malt.
And how long has that aged?
When it was here, you'd probably be getting bottles 3 to 5 years old,
well,
I would think.
But I mean before it was in the bottle. I mean, that was supposed to be aged a long time, right?
No, I doubt it was more than months, but I don't know for sure.
It would be hard to say. Most of that's just going to be from it being on a shelf for a long time.
Yeah.
But barley wines can age longer, especially if you look at like Bigfoot. Bigfoot is a very hoppy barley wine, and that over time, the hops kind of will blend in and diminish a little bit, and you'll get that true like barley wine flavor. I really like Bigfoot after like year two. I think it's fantastic.
Oh, really?
I agree with you. Yeah. When it's fresh, I find it undrinkable.
So, in other words, you just leave the bottle in a dark spot and
drink
it.
Dark, cool place.
Now, that's a very interesting point.
Yeah.
You know, some of the classic stouts that come from overseas, you know, your Sammy Smith Imperial or Oatmeal Stout, they're in clear bottles. And who knows how old they are.
Yeah,
how much different
they are old.
And how much different are they tasting when you open an old bottle here as opposed to across the pond?
Most beer styles should be fresh. I don't want to get people thinking that their beer should be old. If you want to taste malt and hops as the brewer intended, drink the beer fresh and keep it cold its whole life to keep it from going stale.
Yeah.
Temperature increases chemical reaction rates, including the reactions that are staling beer.
And the clear bottles are the worst offender,
right? Well, that lets
light
through. So beers, especially beers with high hops, will react with the light, rearrange the hop chemicals into a chemical very similar to that which skunks spray.
Right.
So the beer will smell like a skunk.
And green bottles too, yeah.
Yeah, green and blue and ultraviolet light.
That's why my Moosehead always had a little bit of skunk to it.
Ultraviolet light is blocked mostly by the glass, but the blue and green light is not blocked by blue or green glass or clear glass. So the beer will skunk. And strong dark beers like Bigfoot, especially a hoppy one like Bigfoot, I agree with Kevin. Year two, even year three, Bigfoot is really nice.
I'll be darned.
But most beers, I wouldn't drink that old.
No, and also you also have oxidation issues over a certain period of time, too, with those bottles.
Lately, I've been gravitating to beer in cans And it, I think it, next to keg or, and tap, you're doing the best with cans.
Not necessarily, actually.
Really?
Yeah, not even close. This is becoming somewhat of a...
Well, no, I'm not saying it's as good as going into Druthers and getting something off the tap.
No, it's not even as good as some bottles.
Oh, I disagree.
Because cans, here's the deal. We're getting a bottling line in a couple of months.
Okay, now I see the angle. All right,
so,
go ahead.
The bottling line we're getting is one of the best you could get it for a brewery our size.
Mm-hmm.
That's $700,000. To get a canning line that is the same level of quality is $1.2 million. We don't have that kind of money. We don't even have $700,000. We're financing it over 20 years.
Okay, fine.
but,
all right, thank you.
But so to do cans right, to do them right, And when they are done right, they're a fine package. But to do them right is that much money. If you're spending $200,000 on your canning line, honestly, you burned your money. And I've got an oxygen tester at work where I can test people's packages.
All right.
And I've tested cans from other breweries that I won't name.
All right. Well, test Dale's Pale for me, which I think is one of the best beers in a can.
I've tested cans that are at 468 parts per billion oxygen. Let me tell you, my kegs have 15 parts per billion oxygen. That's a normal number. And the beer reacts with the oxygen chemically very quickly so that I can't even detect it. So for a can to have 400 plus parts per billion after it's been on the store shelf for a couple of weeks means it started at thousands. Or the seam was leaking or both, because a cheap canning line won't make a good seam. And that's a problem too.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do some research and some study before the next time you're on, George. It's always the same. Richard in Leeds. Richard, you're on.
Yes, I was wondering if the gentlemen have ever come across a definitive date for when brewers knew for sure that they needed to add yeast to get the alcohol. All my readings, I've always seen they understood that it made the carbon dioxide. They were using open pots for brewing. And while yeast was getting into the beer, into the wort, but when did they understand that they had to add yeast? Do you guys ever come across any facts on that?
I could not give you a date on that one.
It's right about 1860 that Louis Pasteur.
Yeah, I know about Louis Pasteur. Do you
yeast.
Think that's the date then?
Well, that's when people knew what yeast did. Before then, it was argued that it was a chemical reaction. They didn't know what the sludge that was at the bottom of each batch was. They knew if they took that sludge and added it to the new wort, things worked faster, but they didn't know why until Louis Pasteur isolated yeast and figured out the science of fermentation.
That's the closest date I've come, but I've never seen anybody said, this is the light that goes off.
Yeah, that's brewers are slow. You know, we've been brewing since before human history, and it took until 1860 or so for somebody to figure out where the alcohol and carbon dioxide was actually coming from.
So this vaunted German purity law of 13 whatever, they didn't even know really why it
the Rheinheitsgebot didn't have the original Rheinheitsgebot didn't have yeast in it.
Interesting.
Because they didn't know. Yeah.
Well, I'll be darned. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's the Beer Show. George DePiro is here from Druthers. Kevin Mullen from Rare Form Brewing. And a guest, much like the Bob Hope walk-on on the Tonight Show, it's Joe Donahue. You're a little late.
Yes.
And we'll try to catch you up. We've tried two different beers.
I think it's called a head start.
We had a head start, and we had some delicious beer here from both Rare Form and Druthers, and we'll give you a sip of both while we take another call here.
This is amazing. What am I drinking from Rare Form?
That's our Night Ride Dry Stout.
Man.
Very nice. You like?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I love a stout.
Do you? And you okay after lunch? Everything all right? All right.
You know what, Ray? Everything's great.
All right. So this is like the Tonight Show.
Yeah.
Like the old. All I got to do is light
up. I'm Bernie Capel at this point.
Wow. All right. Well, when you come down from that high, let me know. Let's go to Bill in Rhinebeck. Bill, you're on.
Hey, I got a question about beer and, well, headaches. And I don't know if it's allergies, but that's what I'm thinking. I'm not really a beer connoisseur. You know, generally just drink off-the-shelf stuff from the supermarket. But even something like a Samuel Adams, you know, their Boston Lager will, you know, by the end of the first bottle, I'll have a headache. Whereas something that's lighter, like a Stella, I'm fine with two or three of them. And in general, anything that's got, you know, character or is darker or heavier, it causes headaches, and I'm wondering if you have any ideas what that is all about.
That's a great question.
Well, I got a feeling George will have a 12-minute dissertation.
I was just going to say that's really sad, but I really don't have any ideas.
I agree with him, though.
And I mean,
There are some beers that you have where, yeah, they hit you all of a sudden where you get a headache, whereas other beers you don't.
And I could name brands, but when I was younger, you know, early 20s, if you went to a party and had X bottled beer,
yes,
you always got I always got a headache. Y bottled beer did not.
Now, a couple of Tylenol knocks that out, and you know, you keep going. I'm not saying it stops you, but
oh, that's
still
great. Yes. That's a wonderful message.
Now, the gentleman's examples are what's confusing me. I mean, Stella's just a light lager, and Sam Adams is just, you know, it's not that much stronger. It's about the same strength. It's not particularly different in ingredients.
But let's say I have an 8.8 or a 9.2.
Well, yeah, those bigger beers, I do have some answers for that, especially if you have like a Hefeweizen or a Belgian ale.
Yes.
Those yeasts that smell really fruity and make the beer really interesting also make a lot of alcohol that are higher in molecular weight than our friend ethanol. And those higher alcohols...
You know, our friend ethanol.
I saw that particular educational film in middle school.
Our friend ethanol.
So those alcohols that are bigger in molecular weight than ethanol tend to, while they're really fruity and cool tasting, really mess your head up. I've experienced that where, if you, especially like with a Weizenbock, a strong German Hefeweizen, you'll be hungover before you finished your glass. And it's like, oh, ouch. But... you know, between lagers, I've never heard anybody complain that two different lagers were giving them that same effect, because lager yeast brew relatively cleanly.
Bill, have you done any studies, more or less empirically, about, you know, I'm going to try this one tonight and see if I get a headache, and I'll try this one tomorrow and see if I don't get a headache?
Well, I play music with a bunch of guys every Wednesday night.
Well, that's your first
and
mistake.
Generally, the cooler is stocked with Stella, but if somebody brings Sam instead, I notice immediately, and it is quite repeatable.
Interesting.
So maybe it's just some particular ingredient that's in Sam but not Stella. I don't know.
Could be psychosomatic.
Yeah. I had a friend that
it
was...
It absolutely could be, you know, question of meeting my own expectations.
Could be your friends, too.
Could be the music.
Hey, Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Kevin, you were going to say?
Yeah, I had a friend that he would have allergic reactions to certain beers, and it came down to certain different hops is what we figured out over just years of testing.
Interesting.
Himself, and he had a good time testing. But he would there were certain beers that he would have, and I would look at the hop profile of what those were, and his face would break out. And then if it was if the same beer had different hops, it wouldn't. And so there was this, we kind of narrowed it down to must have some type of allergic reaction to whatever is...
That's funny. Now, while we're on anecdotal,
so hop variety, not quantity so much, or was it quantity?
It was more hop variety.
Interesting.
While we're on anecdotal information, I have found that if I go to a local pub, and in the old days I would have this, where if I had a draft beer from, I'm not going to say the name of the place because they've changed, but I would get a headache. And I believe it was something in the taps, because if I went to that same place and had bottle, there wouldn't be a problem.
Dirty tap lines.
Yeah, it could be dirty tap lines and sensitive skull for you.
Well, I've got a very sensitive skull. That's true.
I just like the story that you can break out, but yet still keep drinking and trying.
Yeah, I was thinking that, because you said your friend
had great,
fun doing,
you know?
That's like, wow, I don't know that would be so much fun.
I'm doing this for science.
Oh, yes, and we do it all for science here. George, what do you have for us now?
Yeah, what is this, George?
So this is Druthers Dry Stout. I figured since Kevin poured his St. Patrick's Day Dry Stout, I would do ours. This was made by my brewer Brian up in Saratoga, and it's pretty authentically Irish tasting in that it's much lower in roast character than Kevin's was. Yeah. And mild tasting, lighter in body, and it's about 4.3, 4.5% alcohol.
And I don't mean this as a slight, but it tastes that, right? I mean, it tastes, yeah, it's a lighter beer.
It's got the nice little cocoa and coffee note, but much more subdued than Kevin's.
And what was yours as far as alcohol content?
4%.
Yeah, okay.
So right around the same ballpark.
Yeah. Right.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by George DePiro and Kevin Mullen, and we talk beer and brewing today. Joe Donahue is our special guest star, and we'll go over to John and Canaan. John.
Hi there, guys. I'm a part-time farmer in Columbia County, and I'm curious whether you guys know anything about the state of the market in terms of supply of hops for local brewers in the upstate New York area. Are there plenty of hops that are being supplied? Is there a shortage of hops?
That's funny. I had heard there was a hop shortage several years ago, but is that overblown?
No, it existed, and I know, like, I'll go on the air and say it. I'm pretty sure it was manufactured, and I know other brewers that have agreed with me on that.
Conspiracy theory, eh?
Yeah.
You're a hop truther.
Yeah. Well, there's really not that many different hop companies in the country, so it's
because it seems like now, at least in Washington County where I live, that everybody and their brother
I just heard a Kraftwerk song for a moment there. Okay.
That everybody and their brother is growing hops. So does that seem to be the case?
There are a lot more hop farms coming up lately.
Around here? In New York?
New York.
Oh, yep, that's
absolutely.
Terrific.
Because
really
of the farm brewery law? Is correct. That partially? Yep. Yes.
There is a lot of supply. Is that what I'm hearing?
Nope. There still needs to be more supply. A lot of these hop farms are coming up, but they're not putting a lot of acreage in doing them yet. And they still.
I mean, it's expensive to get into the hop business, so you wouldn't want to do that unless you really knew there was an adequate need for yet another supplier.
Absolutely. The best thing I would do if you're looking at interested in growing hops is talk to the Cary Institute. They have a specific. They're just in business to help farmers and help with the brewing industry and get the New York State farm bills together.
Oh, I'll
and
be darned.
They work with a lot of different hop
farmers. In Rensselaerville? Is that the one?
Yep.
Great.
Absolutely.
Huh.
And they also work with a lot of different farmers on malt product as well, barley. So I would talk to them. There is definitely a shortage, especially as the percentages grow up for the farm bills. That's going to go from 20 to 80%. So, yeah, I would talk to them, and they can give you more information.
All right, we'll take a break here. Our number is 800-348-2551. We'll try some more beer, and we'll find out what's in that rectangular box over there. It's Vox Pop. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Uncle Sam's All-American Chocolate Factory, offering over 100 chocolates, including truffles, butter crunch, and sea-salted caramels, located on Albany Street, Schenectady, and Newton Plaza, Loudonville. UncleSamsCandy.com. Field Goods, working to help people change the way they eat and support sustainable communities. Local produce from the Hudson Valley, delivered weekly, year-round, to workplaces and community locations. Field-Goods.com. Big Elm Brewing at 65 Silver Street in Sheffield, Massachusetts. Tap room open Thursdays through Saturdays, 12 to 6 p.m. BigElmBrewing.com. And Personal Wine Cellar, Glenville, New York, offering an eclectic selection of red, white wines and spirits, wine tasting every Thursday and Friday, monthly scotch and bourbon tasting, home delivery services every weekend, 518-399-9463.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Food Friday, a Beer Friday here on a St. Patrick's Day with Ray Graff and Joe Donahue and George DePiro and Kevin Mullen and you at 800-348-2551 and via email at voxpopwamc.org. This one came in from Jeremy in Great Barrington, who writes, "Thanks for a great show. I've got a question about substitutes for unobtainable brews.
Oh.
Most beer drinkers are aware of coveted products such as Alchemist Heady Topper or Lawson's Sip of Sunshine. Well, I've never heard of either one, but very few of us.
Heady Topper was great in that movie from 43. Wasn't that great?
And I thought Hedda Gabler was very good, too. But very few of us will ever be able to taste them due to severely limited distribution, production quantities, and cost. Can you give us a few examples of more widely available products that would come as close as possible in their uniqueness to their supposedly spectacular beers?"
Well, with a Sip of Sunshine, you should be able to get, because that is also brewed over at Two Roads, and they produce that a lot more, and that's pretty widely distributed.
Yeah.
Other than that, I guess you'd have to really look at the breweries around your area and go try them out. That's what I would say.
Right, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Well, thank
just
you.
Try different India Pale Ales, because that's what those all are.
So what's in the box, George?
Those are donuts made with my oatmeal stout by Cider Belly.
You're kidding me.
I'm not.
Oh, my God, they look phenomenal.
I walked into my office this afternoon, and there was a box of donuts on my desk. And I said, what am I going to do with a whole box of donuts?
So these are made with your stout.
Yes.
You know?
So there you go.
Note to my producer, we must get Cider Belly on this Food Friday one of these days.
It does really seem that whenever I drop in,
there are donuts.
A box of Cider Belly donuts.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Quite cool. Handy.
Our number is 800-348-2551. I must try this donut, and then we'll have some more beer. Let's go to Tim in Boston Spa. Tim.
Yes, I'm holding in my hand a vintage bottle of Ballantine India Pale Ale.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, Ballantine.
It has a brief biography, if you will. Discovered in the spring of 1824, purely by chance, when a keg of rare ale was opened after a sea voyage between England and Calcutta.
Ah.
And I started drinking Ballantine Ale back in my teens. I'm 70 years old. But sometime after I got out of the service in 1970, I discovered Ballantine India Pale Ale.
I've had that for years, too, and I love it. I didn't know you could still get it.
They stopped making it right when, or just before, all the microbrews came out.
Huh.
And they didn't make it for years, and now it's available again.
Now, did somebody buy the name, or is it the same company?
Well, the bottle I have in my hand was brewed by Falstaff. But of late, I don't know. I'm sure somebody else has got it. But it got passed around a little. But that was really good stuff. And it was like regular Ballantine Ale, only twice.
Do you remember that,
and
George?
I had that.
No.
You don't remember Ballantine?
I know the name, but that's before my time.
Oh, my God.
Really? As a matter of fact,
it's not that different in age. That's
no, but it's not. It was region specific, I believe.
Really? Now, where are you from originally?
Near New York City.
Oh, I think Ballantine was down there.
Philadelphia.
Ballantine was available all over.
Yeah, maybe you were in that period of time. Grew up when it was gone.
Yeah, that's. I mean, like I said, I know the name, but that's about it.
It's so funny that you read that history, Tim, because that's how I learned my history of India Pale Ale, and it's probably not even true.
Right.
You know, they probably made it up for the side of the bottle.
Back in the day, the little hotel across the street from you started to stock it, especially for me.
Really? Oh, Paulie's Hotel, huh?
Popular.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, Tim, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. This is the sour beer?
Yes. This is. I figured we'd go off in a different direction since we just had so many stouts.
Yeah.
And so this is a strong version of our beer called the Dare, and I'm so clever at naming beers that when I named our German style Goza the Dare, when I made a strong version, I called it Double Dare.
Oh, I love that show.
That's why I brew instead of market. Yeah, no. I'm not a marketer.
Mark Summers, I believe.
Oh, Mark Summers. Yeah.
So it's made sour by Lactobacillus bacteria, same stuff that's in yogurt, and it's got coriander in it, which gives it a nice citrusy note. And a little bit of salt, not enough to make it salty. I do the math, so I know I'm bringing the sodium up just to flavor threshold.
How much normally do you use salt?
In this?
Or in any beer?
Never in any other
beer.
Okay,
so this is,
yeah,
this
so
is
that's
a rarity.
That's a weird thing, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, there's sodium in the water already, but way below flavor threshold. So I add just enough kosher salt to bring the sodium up to the edge of flavor threshold. And that helps to enhance the malt character and balance the tartness.
Just for the record, I would much rather have this than yogurt.
Well.
There you go.
Now, the Gosa.
Not as much calcium, though.
This tastes better than. After the first time you were on and you brought some of this, I'd never heard of it. And I bought some from a boutique brewer. I don't remember which one. Didn't like it. This is much more, I think, palatable, and it's maybe not quite so angular. I don't know if that's a way to describe
it. Yeah, angular is a good way to describe acidity, I think. And you know, this beer is 9%,
yeah.
So there's a lot of malt to back up the sourness. But even in my regular version, the sourness needs to be balanced by other flavors. If you're drinking salad dressing, that's not pleasant.
Well, It depends on the a good bottle of Marie's. Let's go to Bill in Athens. Bill, you're on.
Hello. Am I there?
Yes, you are. Well, I don't know if you're there, but you're here.
Hey,
Bill, time out for a sec. Can you get off speakerphone if possible?
Let me do that. That's
a big 10-4.
I'm off speakerphone. How's that?
Beautiful. All right, go ahead.
Well, lots of different questions, and I'll run our topics that maybe they can talk about later on. Malting in New York State. I know some folks want to be malters, and a lot of great craft beers in the Hudson Valley, including Keegan's and Crossroads and the ones up here in the Albany area. And that was what led me to call, was because I think Joe Vama's Stout and Crossroads Black Rock Stout taste very similar. They sound like they met the description of the first one you were describing. And I'd like George and Kevin to kind of talk about that. And the last question was, would like to hear about sometime. Okay, how important is that to good?
Okay, we lost a little of that, stout. Bill. I think your connection's bad. Try that last part of that question again.
Okay, and that's... The water quality in your state is great. How important is good quality water to making good beer?
Okay. All right. Let's let them have at it. Kevin, you go first.
Water is, you know, what's the majority of what beer is. So water is extremely important. And for different recipes, you can kind of play around with the water to get what the brewer wants out of it. And I think that to me, our water is very, very important.
Okay.
And Troy has fantastic water, so I'm really lucky about that.
There you go. George, what are you doing?
Smelling the beer.
This is Kevin's.
Yeah, this is Kevin's coconut stout.
Kevin, this is
coconut porter.
Porter.
Smells delicious. Now, did you catch any of those questions, or were you deep in thought?
Regarding the water.
I don't like talking about other people's beers, so I can talk about my beers because I make my beers. But yeah, water is important, as Kevin said. It's very boring, though, water chemistry, so we don't usually talk about it much. The key...
Well, that never stopped us, did it, Ray?
No. Have you ever tuned in before?
The key parameter in water for beer quality is what's called residual alkalinity. I mean, this is assuming that your water is safe. You know, there's no PFOA in it or anything like that. But if your water is safe to drink and... it's got low residual alkalinity, you can make pretty much any style of beer with it. Water with a high residual alkalinity without any other treatment, like in the bad old days when they didn't know about water chemistry, you could only make dark beers. And so if you look at a map of Europe and overlay the residual alkalinity of the water and then overlay on top of that the beer styles native to those regions, you'll see that dark beers were born in places with high residual alkalinity water.
Well, who knew? Bill.
So that takes us right back to Stout and St. Patrick's Day, because Dublin's one of those places with a lot of residual alkalinity in the water. So there you go.
Well, Bill, I think I've lost control of the show, and I'm sure you're sorry you asked that question, but we got a good answer. It's 800-348-2551. Juan in Hopewell Junction. You're on.
Yes, hi. I have a question. One of my favorite beers, and probably the one I drink exclusively, is La Fin de Monde. And... the website that for the company, Unibrew, suggested that it can be bottle-aged even further because of the beer on lees fermentation process that they use. But I'm not really sure. I love the beer so much that I pretty much drink it within a weekend, a four-pack.
I think you're doing the right thing.
Why hold off?
Yeah, you're doing the right thing. A Belgian-style triple, which is what La Fin de Monde is, really doesn't age that gracefully. As it ages, it's going to take on strong honey-like notes in the aroma.
You mean like from weekend to weekend? Or?
No, from like, you know, a couple of months in, especially
in the bottle.
Warmer.
Yeah,
it's going to become oxidized and get honey-like notes. The malt character is going to fade. The bright, focused character of the finish is going to become muddled. Triples really are better fresh.
All right, Juan, thank you very much. Our number is 800-348-2551. Well, Kevin, this is delicious, and I love the consistency of this coconut porter.
Thank you very much.
May I just say that it is rare to find a coconut beer or coconut product that doesn't taste like suntan lotion.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things
I can't stand.
And this
is very fantastic.
It does not taste like suntan lotion. That's true.
Yeah, and that's great. that it doesn't. It's really good it because it has that porter quality.
Maybe you could put that in the advertising. Right. Joe Donahue doesn't taste like suntan lotion. Gerard in Schenectady. Gerard, you're on.
Shots of suntan lotion.
Hey, happy St. Patrick's Day,
hey, and to you.
Hey, got a quick question. So I'm a big fan of Weihenstephaner Pilsner. Claims to be the oldest brewery in the world. Started, I think, 1040 AD. And now I go to distributors, and I have a really hard time getting the beer, primarily because I pick up the bottle and I tip it over, and I see a ton of little floaties in there. Now, the distributors, they tell me that, oh, they're supposed
like the
to be
eye
there.
Show.
But now I haven't really had a good experience with drinking beer with floaties in it. So what do you guys think?
It's because the beer is old.
Floaties or not?
It's the beer is old.
It's old.
Weihenstephaner Pilsner is fine if you're drinking it in Germany. Pilsner doesn't really travel that well. And if it gets temperature cycled, if it goes from hot to cold and hot to cold again, it's going to throw what's called chill haze. It won't affect the flavor other than that it's staling as it's getting old. But eventually those protein flocks are going to form flakes and they're going to settle to the bottom of the bottle. So that's a sign of extreme age.
But they won't kill you.
No, it's not going to hurt you, but it's that shows the beer is outrageously old.
There you go. Gerard, thank you very much. Over to Ken in Waterville 8. Ken.
Hey there. How you doing?
Good.
I used to work in the beverage industry, and I was just curious about, when you're at a bar that has many beers on tap, if we were serving Guinness, we would have to mix nitrogen with the carbon dioxide to push it so that it wouldn't foam out. Why is that?
Well, most beer is what they call beer gas, which is a solution, a mixture of CO2 and nitrogen. Most taps or gas lines, whatever, will run about 70% CO2 and 30% nitrogen. And then, like Guinness is a nitrogen beer. So a nitrogen beer line usually switches that to about 60% nitrogen and 40% CO2. And what you're trying to really do with that is just one of the gases is to try to push the other gas. So you're with a nitrogen beer or with Guinness specifically, that beer is designed to be on nitro. That's just what they always had. I don't think they've ever done anything else.
It comes down to partial pressures. Yeah. Guinness is meant to be low carbonation and pushed under high pressure. If you try to, because they push it through a sparkler faucet.
To get the velvety.
To try to emulate cask conditioned serving. So if you try to push the beer under high pressure using carbon dioxide dissolves in water really well. So the beer will become unbearably foamy and unpourable. So they push it with mostly nitrogen. Nitrogen does not dissolve in water very well. So it doesn't over fizz the beer, and you get that shower foam effect in the glass that fades in a reasonable amount of time. If you push other beers with nitrogen over a short distance, we have this issue with a lot of our accounts off premises. They push the beer with beer gas, but they don't have a long run. So they're only pushing with like 12 pounds of pressure and only 70% of that is carbon dioxide. So the beer is actually going flat in the keg.
Interesting. You know, there are cans, like for instance, Boddington's, they come with a nitrogen
pellet.
Yeah.
I don't like the consistency. I love Boddington's.
I
love the taste.
Yeah,
but it's
I prefer the natural, silky. Yeah, I prefer
the
natural carbonated nature.
Because
of beer.
They become very silky and not.
I need a little
really
fizz.
Alcoholic. Yeah, very.
Well, there's alcohol. I just
think
fizzy. It doesn't have the bubble,
right,
the
not,
tiny
not
bubble.
Fizzy. Yeah. It knocks all the carbonation out.
All right, we have about a minute here. Let's find out what is on tap and coming up here at Druthers, George.
Wow. Well, and we're working on opening a Schenectady location, so that's a pretty big deal.
Well, good for you.
And
when's the Maybach out, man? That's what I want
to know. The Maybach should be, we're going to package it next week when the winter warmer goes away. The Maybach will come on.
All right, I need to.
So come drink winter warmer.
What's this beer that we didn't drink?
This is Druthers Oatmeal Stout. We were going to compare and contrast stouts.
Well, that's for after the show.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
All right,
now, Kevin, what's happening at Rare Form coming up?
We've got some new beers coming out almost on a weekly basis. We have a new IPA with raw rye in it.
Raw?
Ooh.
Raw rye.
Is it Egyptian?
Raw rye?
Raw rye, I know.
What is that?
Rye, the grain rye.
Ah.
Raw rye from a farm here in Staticote. We've done some other beers with that rye, and I really enjoyed
it. Interesting.
Okay. So that's going to be coming out here soon. At our spring beer that releases our coconut cream ale.
All right. What's the website at Rare Form?
Ooh.
Rareformbrewing.com.
And George for Druthers?
Druthersbrewing.com. We're so simple. Like I said, brewers are simple people.
This is a beautiful thing. Well, you guys did a great job. And Joe Donahue, what's your website?
My website is WAMC.org.
Okay, well, you're awake enough to remember that.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, we're done, people. Thank you very much for being here, and thanks to everybody who called. And sorry if you didn't make it through. You know, once you get George going on an answer, the whole show is over, really, basically. Support comes from Blue Heron Restaurant and Catering, offering full-service catering at the restaurant in Sunderland and throughout western Massachusetts. BlueHeronDining.com/catering. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Dairy at No Moo, dairy-free, handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. At Roundhouse Bakery, Cambridge, New York, featuring baked goods along with coffee, teas, soups, and sandwiches, using locally sourced and organic as available produce and ingredients, Facebook.com/Roundhouse Bakery Cafe. Thanks again to our guests today. This was great. Kevin Mullen, George DePiro, Joe Donahue, thank you all for being here. Thanks to our producer, Zach Malloy. And your phones were taken by Barb King. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a lovely weekend. If you're going out to celebrate St. Paddy's Day, get a designated driver. Do not be an idiot. On Monday, it's a Medical Monday at 2 p.m. Meantime, have a great weekend. The news is next.